Hello, everybody. This is Izzoellen's Writes with Izzoellen's Grown-Up Storytime. How are you? I am doing a special chapter. Well, the chapter is not special, but the doing of it is special because usually I have so far only posted on Fridays, but I wanted to post a special chapter as a thank you to some donors to my new fundraiser. I'm hoping to fundraise enough funds to keep this account going, to keep the Podbean and the broadcasting happening. So before I go into detail on that and get all chit-chatty, I'm going to go ahead and stop there and start on chapter 5 of my work in progress called Caught. I pasted something that looked like hope on my face. "Are you going to take me home?" The hunter climbed on his cycle and leaned back, motioning to me. He exuded a calm vibe, an impatient man waiting patiently. Kallax meant for me to get on that fast-moving modern vehicle. Not just on it, but to sit in front of him, in the little space between the directional bars and his body. The bikes were built for one person. I'd seen them, rarely, take two. A passenger clinging to the driver's back, but his seat was built different. There was only a pinch of space behind him and no space for my legs around the exposed wheel. He'd be wrapped around me, touching me, everywhere. "I need to go to my flat," I said. His expression didn't change. Next to him, Max and Gage had started their cycles, both things coming to life with a low hum I could feel in my chest. Seven pressed against my side, her head on my shoulder. She nudged me. The contact let me see and feel her thoughts. She was thinking of her home, her den, where it would be safe from the light of dawn. The other animals moved around me, nudging me. They really were too large and unique among other creatures to be acting with all this eager doggishness. They licked me, stepped on my toes, smacked me in the face with their tails, and almost pushed me to the ground with their friendly eagerness. Kallax sat there and watched, one eyebrow cocked. He told me the hounds wanted me with them. He hadn't been lying. "I can't just go with you. I have to get my stuff," I told the silent figure on the cycle. His eyes did another once-over, taking in my clothing. Almost sticking my tongue out at him for that, I managed to say, "I'm a girl. Girls need their stuff if you are just going to steal them from their lives." Managing to clap my jaw shut on the rest, I took a willing step in his direction. He hadn't forced me yet. Chin-jerking in a nod that I took as his agreement, I let him guide me into place without screaming, crying, or doing any of the things I wanted to be doing. I needed to get to my home and get my hair dye and my tea and the wraps for my chest and the spice oil I washed with, everything that contributed to disguising myself as an Indonesian. I wanted my mother's books, her journal, the little box, and the bracelet with the broken clasp she used to wear. I wanted my pathetic life. Kallax had just seen the light show. All the other stuff was the security blanket I'd wrapped myself up in to make me feel more human, normal. I wasn't going to give it up just because he'd caught me being nice to his pack of hellhounds. Taking my hand, reeling me in, radiating masculine satisfaction, he put me where he wanted me. I'd had more physical contact with the person today than I'd had in years. His body, the touch of his bare hand on mine, his breath in my ear as he curved around me and tucked me into him before engaging the vehicle protective shield. All of this, the hunter, Kallax, put together, sent bubbles of effervescent magic free through my system that I had wanted to keep dampened and flat. Instead of painful or uncomfortable, the sensation felt good, natural, and perfect in a way that stirred up screams in my head. My magic wanted to go to this man. I didn't want the magic or the man. His lips touched my forehead. "Easy now, Modokadalich. See, we can be friends. I know you can feel it." I didn't deny what I felt, but I'm pretty sure I understood my needs better than a stranger who came out of nowhere. I don't need a friend. His hand fit over the ball of my shoulder, smoothed down the bulky clothing I wore, and followed the lines of my arm to my fingers poking out at the end of the cuffs. He really didn't like my clothing. I'd need to make sure to pack all of it. He folded my arm over my waist with his, forcing me closer, my back to his front. "You don't know what you need, because you don't know what you've been missing. Don't worry, I'll show you." That sounded like a sensual promise I did not want him to keep. Nope, not happening. My jaw was starting to hurt from gritting my teeth. "Don't want you to show me anything. You said I could wash your dishes. Do you have a special trick with that?" "I have many tricks." His voice dripped in intoxicating honey tones. "Will you tell me where your flat is? Or shall I take you home and show you some of them?" "My flat. Take me to my flat. To the old Putter Lodge at the edge of the towers. Do you know where that is?" He didn't answer me. Instead, called out a word in that magic language, turned the cycle, and lifted his feet from the ground. I yelped at the weird feeling of the vehicle between my legs. As large as the hellhounds in their fur, I'd never ridden on something like this. Mage created and mage powered. The lodge had sheltered me since birth. Top right corner flat of the old Putter building, built to house a mass influx of vanillium miners from years ago, when the Tower Forest still bloomed in the spring. The forest was dead now, most of the vanillium gone, union companies withdrawn, but all their structures remained. The lodge had been built in 2 days and still stood as a strong sign of union forces' ingenuity some 80 years later. My landlord, an ex-union soldier, bragged about the history of the place to all who would listen. Commandeering the empty building and making a profit of it was his greatest life accomplishment. My mother had moved here before my birth. When she married Mikos, he and his daughter moved in with us. When my mother and Mikos died, Radonna and I found ways to pay the rent. It was 3 rooms, one of them a private toilet, and a kitchen with convenience appliances that no longer functioned for lack of power. The energy inside of my mother had made everything work when I was young. I remembered lights, food kept cold, and hot water. I tried once to turn on the hot plate after she died when I was home alone, just to see what would happen. I proved to myself I was no kind of witch like my mother, and never tried again. In the last years, with more mines turning up dry, the tiny bead of vanillium needed to conduct energy and power in the gnoll-made machinery had become valuable enough that I had sold everything in the house that could be carried. I'd never be able to make them work anyways. Marvel to union ingenuity or not, the lodge was run down. In Kallax's eyes, I realized that it was worse than I had thought. I saw debris on the stairs, the broken doors and windows on the bottom floor, the drunks laying outside the hallway, waiting for the widow Ginna to open her door and invite them in for a price. When I used the key to open the 3 locks, I got looks from the hunter and his men like I was crazy. Metal locks were used by the gnolls and known to be worthless. I ignored them. I was a gnoll, a human woman, not a witch. Kallax made me wait while Max went in first. "I only smell the girls," he said. Like that was a signal, they let me walk in. "What else would you be smelling?" I asked, not thinking. "Dead men," Kallax growled above me. 3 big men in my space, and it felt suddenly tiny. Mikos and his friends playing dice at the little table never made it feel this small. I had to move around them like pillars, as if they purposely boxed me in. "Could you just..." "I've always lived here. This is my home." "This is a dump," Gage said. I snapped. "Nobody asked you." Disgust evident in their body language. These unwelcome men caused an ugly shame to fill me. The flat was my home, with a few good memories tucked away like treasures. The whimsical, curling limbs of the tree my mother had painted on our bedroom walls, with the shadow of the mythical stag of the towers among them. The couch she had found and sweet-talked 2 blushing farm boys into carrying home. The corner in the kitchen where she created healthy meals that always tasted awful. Kallax and his buddies made me see it in a different light. run down, dirty, poor. Get your things, girl, Kallax said. I had to light the oil lamp to see, and that had all the men cursing and saying nasty things about my home. I'd never had anyone stir up the rage inside of me more. Moving to do his bidding, my arms jerking with muscle-tightening anger, I felt that spanking with the rough drag of my underwear against the back of my thighs. Pretty sure it was weird to be thankful again for the reminder that he was the top of the food chain and I couldn't defeat him. I'd been brought down by the biggest alpha of them all, and even my mouth recognized it. At least for right now. I hope it lasted. Max went over to the couch, covered with knitted and crocheted blankets, getting comfortable. I noticed that his head was tipped back, and he kept inhaling deeply, sniffing the air. What was wrong with him? Could he be coming down with something? Going to the bedroom, I found a bag in the closet and just started grabbing things. How long am I going to be gone? When can I come back? How many dishes do you have? Standing just inside the doorway, leaning back against it like he'd had a long night, arm crossed over his chest, Kallax watched me. I have a lot of dishes. I grabbed a shirt, my other set of bindings, and the bras for my chest. Underwear. I've always lived here, I pointed at the bed. I'd shared this room with my mother until Mikos, then moved out onto the couch with Berdana, and then later moved back. Kneeling to better reach the bottom drawer, I scooped up the towels and the bottles of darkening tint I used to color my hair, shoving them in the bag too. You won't need that crap anymore. He knew what they contained. These words were like a warning, as if he already knew. What was he going to be expecting from me? I get you think I can be a danger to you. I get that you can't have that. But you are nobody to me, no relation to me. You have no right to do this. I tried to sound reasonable. Don't know what you planned for your life, Mo Cuddleach. Doesn't look like they were big plans, smart plans. You need a protector. I packed my bottles away with hope, not defiance, I told myself. Went to the box under the bed where I kept my mother's things and pulled it out, setting it on the bed and wrapping it in my favorite blanket. Everything here, shabby though it was, worn out trash to the man watching, was a comfort to me. Maybe I didn't love it, but it was mine. I was connected to this crap in this crappy little flat, connected to the walls where I had scratched my name as a kid, connected to the carpet where I had spilled my nightly tea at least 10 times, connected to the fragments of my mother. I'd planned to leave someday. There was a little stash of coins in the box with my mother's broken bracelet and her journal, but on my own terms to a future I had welcomed. Who says I haven't been looking for the right kind of protector? I wasn't going to stay in New Indio forever, I said, lifting up the bundle I had made and turning toward the man blocking my exit. He gave me an eyebrow lift, looking down at me, unconvinced. I could go now. Go west through the forest. There are some big farms beyond the forest. I could find a decent protector far away, leave you and the hellhounds alone. No more treats for them, no more threat from a girl half your size. I don't want anything to do with you, Hunter. My head came to the middle of his chest. I set my eyes at the base of his neck, not wanting to look at the masculine angles of his face or those full lips. Never in my wildest dreams would I have imagined the Hunter standing in my bedroom, the place I slept, the place I had my most private thoughts. I wanted him out of this room, the flat, my life. I wanted him and his two friends any place but near me. Having gotten too close to him, trying to get past him through the door, he took advantage, touched me. His big hand cupped the side of my head, warm, dry fingers smoothing the flyaway wisps of my hair down over my jaw until his thumb brushed over my lips, setting my skin, my magic, to tingling. The energy in me, in just a couple of hours, had stirred to wakefulness at a wild and frightening degree. No longer at an ember, secreted away, forgotten. He fanned it to a flame. I could see from his eyes that his touch was bringing out all the little sparkles of magic, but even more so, I could feel it, a surging monster that I had been trying to eliminate since I was a child. My knees wobbled, body trembling, physically weakened by the surge of eager magic rushing to the surface to meet this particular man. Don't, I said. His damn constant touching, unwanted, unwelcomed, his magic thinned the walls I had built, turning my iron will into tissue paper. Not a fool. I knew that my hold on my nature wasn't infallible. I had taken steps, planned and plotted until the thing inside had given up. With Mikos, a native-born mage, around all the time to practice on as a teenager, I'd learned to stuff the magic away. Until the day of his death, my mother's husband believed me a mongrel, her womb wasted with my birth. The two men were nothing alike. The hunter lived up to his reputation as a force to be feared. I'd become a target for his relentless chase, and instead of hiding, the monster inside of me wanted out to play. Swelling to a sudden fireball, bouncing around what felt like a hole behind my ribs, taking up the space where my anatomy said my lungs should be, stealing my air. Two hands on my face now holding me, making it worse. I lost the ability to talk. Trapped by him, my arms went slack. I dropped everything. Breathe, he commanded. I choked on nothing. The command forced me by that chain, on me by that chain and his magic, while inside of me that ball just grew bigger. Fuck, Anya, what have you done to yourself? I was not a witch, not a witch. I wanted to tell him that, but I couldn't. He'd woken up that thing. It reveled now in freedom under my skin. The lights in the room flickered, dim yellow to bright white. I could hear other magical-powered objects come to life, yelling through the thin walls of the building. On and off, on and off. Something powered on and exploded. The ear-splitting bang and pop of it make the room shake. More cursing. Kallax's men behind him. Kallax touching me. Kallax, you gotta get started. I know. Kallax growled, head lowering, back bending as he leaned down. His eyes swallowed up all my senses. The magic told me he'd make it better. That this was right. My soul screamed in horror. He kissed me. Lips soft, warm fern pressed against mine, kissed me and drank the magic from my lips. Sensation overwhelmed, a crash of windstorm sounds in my ears, the kind of wind that brought down deep-rooted 200-foot trees, the kind of wind that lifted up homes and tossed them around like toys, a storm that broke open things better left shut up and forgotten, a hot, intimate invasion of his mouth. The full body electrified response of his touch on my skin, his command, his presence, his magic, all of it combined in an onslaught of stimulation I couldn't control. Too much. Too much. Okay, that was chapter 5, right? Is that what I was reading from? Let's just be sure that I know what the heck I'm talking about. Yep, chapter 5. From Caught, my current work in progress. I have been reading from a new mic, and I've noticed some of the sounds hitting a little hard as I get used to it. Yeah, and now I'm watching it, and I can't watch the little spikes go up and down. I'm kind of testing this out. Hopefully this works, because people, this is like the reason I feel like I read really well that last time is because I've read through the story like 5 times into the mic today, trying to get it just right. You did hear a pause. I think somebody came to the door. You need to remember that I'm just a woman. Actually, instead of on her phone, I actually have a real microphone now and a laptop, but I'm still in my bedroom. And a microphone, it's probably a $200 or $300. It's my son's. He got it for something to do with video games. And $200 or $300 microphone and a cheapy little laptop, let me tell you, that hardly runs some days. So this is to launch and to say thank you to the people who have already donated to my crowdfunding, I guess that's what we're calling it. My funding on Butter. The links, there are links. You'll notice I now have, if you come to Podbean to listen, you will now find that there are links and that there are more notes beneath the podcast. You'll be able to see more notes because I've been granted more space. because now I have supporters who are helping me pay the cost of doing this. And I want you to know that that blesses me. It blesses me massively that my work is valued enough that you would buy it, essentially, and support it in a monetary way, and can keep supporting it. Lots of ums right now as I try and think through what I'm supposed to be saying. Give Butter is the name of the Give Butter. Yeah. So there are links on this podcast itself. There should be links in the description. If you come to the website, the Podbean website, Isawell and Podbean, there are links there as well. There are links also on my Facebook site. There are links on Twitter. There are links on my website, isawellandwrites@blogspot.com. There's also a player on my website. So if you have access to the internet and don't want to download an app, you can listen to the player from my website. You can also listen to the iTunes. Going up a tier and paying a monthly fee enables me to try to get on Spotify. So you might possibly be able to listen on Spotify. And it might also as well be easier to integrate to YouTube. So you'll be able to listen there. Let me know if you have a preferred platform. Is it worth the effort of going to? I hope it's just an automatic. If it's an automatic, you know, it's just nothing for me to do it, but we'll have to see. So I had a, I don't know. When do you write? When do you read? I always like to read at night, and it is much easier to just grab your phone or your book and a light and read at night than it is to write at night. I have a son who is studying for the ACT, and he was up until 5 a.m. this morning. I kid you not, 5 a.m. I usually get up around 2. I have to write. He's the same way as I am. I think I've said this before to somebody somewhere. He likes to study in the quiet and engage his friends in the quiet and when nobody's around and not be censored and have anybody over his shoulder. And he also focuses better on his math when they're in his homework, when there are their siblings involved. So he's up until late, and he's supposed to be going to bed by 1:30 or 2 so that I can get up and write. Why is it this way? Because we live in a somewhat small house, and it's a community computer. I have a laptop, but the big computer has more memory, works faster, and I can work on big pieces of editing like I am currently doing. I'm currently in edits for Choosing Her Alpha. So yada, 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 all of that. It was pretty much a no-go day. I didn't get much done. And I got to read through this 3 or 4 times, testing it out. Hopefully it works this time. I did test it before I started, but the little blips on the thing are looking so stinking tiny. I hope I did it right. It sounds good in my ears. People, I hope this works. Okay. Also, with going up a tier, I have more time. I have more time for podcasts. I have more time to add to, continue reading the story. If I think I told you, somebody asked, are you going to finish this? Well, this is chapter 5, and I am already writing chapter 14, I believe. 13 or 14 I'm on. That I haven't posted anywhere. So, yeah, I think I'll finish this one. I think it'll finish itself as I have time. One good thing about it is while I can't edit, I can write, you know, chapters of 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 words at a time and then edit them later. They also edit on the big computer with the mouse. This mouse is, you can't edit in bed. You can write in bed, but you can't edit in bed. Here's a little TMI for you. I have sleep problems, and the doctor once told me, he says, you're doing all the things in the bed except for the things you're supposed to be doing. There are only 2 things you're supposed to be doing in bed. I'll let you guess what those 2 things are. Okay, guys, thank you so much for listening. Thank you very, very much for your support. Check out the links. If you have any questions, if I've done something wrong, which is a really big possibility, let's just be honest here, you can email me at isawellen.writes@gmail.com.